Once upon a time, war cries filled the playground. Cans were kicked and slingshots slung. Today, much of the play boys have engaged in for decades is on the banned list. That's why Con Iggulden wrote The Dangerous Book for Boys with his brother Hal. The book clearly touched a nerve, landing on the New York Times bestseller list. Con Iggulden told Anne Strangechamps that boys' play is about more than fun.
You know, and I know, and anyone who's, I think, got an ounce of common sense knows that boys in particular need to test themselves a little bit. When they're young, they need to fall off a tree and they'll learn something, even if it's just that it's painful to fall out of a tree. And no one wants to see a kid hurt, but if you ask a man one of the most important memories, what made him who he is today, he'll tell you something about either being injured or afraid. And it's daft, but it's true. I mean, I have a scar on my thumb from when I learned to cut a piece of wood the right way, away from me and not towards my thumb. These things are what make us who we are. And if you wrap kids in cotton wool and you prevent them from ever falling off monkey bars or running in a playground or, I don't know, even throwing a paper aeroplane, a school in England banned them in case someone put their eye out, would you believe? There's two ways it can go. It can either be a generation of pale, obese children, which is that does look like the way it's going. But then you could also get the kids who, because they've never learned to deal with risk and to handle risk, then they experiment with it the first time they step in a car or they play chicken on a freeway. And we don't want that either, because boys enjoy the adrenaline kick they get from risk. So in a way, they need to be weaned onto it instead of having it hit in one big blast when they get to 15, 16.
Mm. What are some of the dangerous things that you thought you wanted to introduce to boys?
I mean, we played with the bow and arrow, of course. Bow and arrow was good fun. The one we did only managed to fire it shoot it. Archers ring me up and point out that firing doesn't work unless there's gunpowder involved. I know. But you loose it or you shoot it, apparently. We only managed 40 yards. I mean, it was a bit feeble. But I tell you what, the feeling of satisfaction in firing something 120 feet, wonderful. Absolutely brilliant. It's about crafts and skills, and it doesn't have to be fantastically dangerous. I mean, in fact, I'd prefer it not to be. We put in the essential kit, a Swiss Army knife, because they are fantastically useful. But there was a time when every boy had a jackknife, and we don't look back on it as the time of the great slaughter. It's about attitudes more than anything else. I mean, simple woodwork can involve... You could cut a finger off with a chisel, but you know the idea is not to. When I was a kid, you know, we had a really wide range of interests and activities, and no one had ever shut the door. So I was interested in, I don't know, incendiary devices and little electrical circuits and growing crystals and stories of courage. I mean, that's all we were trying to do, really, is reflect that sort of wide-ranging interest.
So it's really kind of an invitation or an introduction to boy culture, kind of old-fashioned boy culture.
In a sense, we've thought about it as a kind of refresher course for dads as well, because we found that there's a lot of things like latitude and longitude that we'd sort of been taught as kids and you'd learnt in a class or maybe you weren't paying attention. And then as an adult, you have sons and then suddenly they ask you the question and you need to be able to know. You know, a father has to be omniscient. He has to know everything. You can't sort of say, look, son, I have no idea why the sky is blue. I mean, you know, you need to know these little things. So, or why the, you know, why does the sun rise in the east in both hemispheres, in Australia and in Britain? Why is that? These are things, it's fun to know. I love geeky knowledge. I mean, I think a lot of men do, to be honest. If you go to a science fiction convention or something, you see a lot of men wearing Spock ears, and no one seems to say, well, hang on, that means that men love stories and men love... And if you go to a coin collecting convention and you see the vast majority of people there are men, you don't think, well, that's because men love expertise and they love difficult knowledge that other people don't have. But it's part of the male psyche. We're peculiar people, but we're basically good-hearted.
Well, you're also suggesting that maybe we underestimate what boys are interested in and what boys can do.
Yes, and there's no doubt about that. I mean, I don't want to sort of come across all the time as a bit Amish and constantly go on about computers and PCs and television, but, you know, there is a definite correlation between the fact that if you take your 6-year-old and your 7-year-old and you let him watch TV 6 hours a day during the summer holidays, you know, he's just not going to grow up to be the kind of fascinating, imaginative kid that you would really like. I don't mean you should always have something for him to do. He needs to be bored sometimes, so he comes up with it himself. But I'm very much against the overuse of television with young children. I mean, I make my living with a computer, and obviously I loved computer games when I was a kid, but I didn't have them in my bedroom when I was very, very young. I couldn't spend hour upon hour on them. It was a rare treat, and sometimes I see there's a 7-year-old cousin of my son's, and, you know, he has a Nintendo DS and a PlayStation and a PC, and to be honest, he spends way too much time on it, and it is a worry. It really is a worry. Kids who do that don't read, and then, you know, that's a problem.
And I also have to say, speaking as an overprotective mother myself, what I love about this book isn't so much that it embraces danger and is going to show my children how to make their own bow and arrow, as that it promotes a kind of play that I worry is disappearing from children's culture. And it's basically the kind of play where you make stuff. You know, somebody, you take a shoebox and yes. a roll of duct tape, and an hour later you have something interesting.
Yes, I mean, it had to be pretty low-tech because most of the things we did as kids, you know, they were low-tech. I mean, I've been to Mongolia for a book on Genghis Khan, and I know about a bit about bow-making, but I didn't do any of that. You know, I didn't laminate sort of sheep's horn onto it or anything like that because kids don't. You know, you want to cut wood green, use it on the same day. It's fairly low-tech, but then that's part of the fun. Being a child is not about electronics, but you can still do a simple electrical circuit and take immense satisfaction from it. And there is that weird thing, and I don't understand it really, but there's something about making something with your hands that is immensely satisfying. Mm. I can't explain it, but it does work. It's hardwired into us.
My family bought one of the first English editions of your book, which introduced us to some wonderful British boys' culture that I hadn't known about. Conkers, for instance?
Yes, we had to take it out for the American one, just because no one had ever heard of Conkers are horse chestnuts. You put a hole through it, usually with a fork. You bend a fork, a tine of a fork, and then shove it in. Make a hole, take a shoelace and shove it through as well, tie a knot, and then you hold it and knock one against the other at high speed in an attempt to make one shatter. And then there's a kind of complicated, you know, playground system of you have a oneer or a twoer or a threer and so on and so on. If a threer beats a fiver, you've got an eighter. That kind of thing. Very rare to have an eighter. I don't think I ever had better than a sixer. And you see, I can see you're glazing over, you see. This is not going to go down too well in America.
I don't know. But, I was thinking this sounded pretty good.
Oh, come on. The sad thing is, in England, some schools have banned children playing conkers in the playground. And even though in the history of the world, no one has ever been hurt by a flying piece of horse chestnut, they've used the words just in case to justify the ban. And it's such a shame. I mean, it's incredible that boys are being sort of, as I say, cotton-walled and wrapped up. There are playgrounds near me at home, about 6 miles from my house, where they've been completely redesigned so that even if a boy, for example, does fall off the slide, it's built into the curve of the ground. So all he'll do is roll to a halt on some rubberized matting. And you think, you know, we're never going to get heroes out of this bunch if that's the best they can do.
So what did you change for the American edition?
Oh, as I say, we got rid of Conkers and we got rid of cricket and put in things like, in the famous battles I had in Gettysburg and the Alamo, some things would have to be different and put in the Wright brothers instead of Robert the Bruce. We kept some, though, because some things obviously, I think some stories are universal, like Douglas Bader, who admittedly is a British World War II flying ace and lost both of his legs and was an extraordinary character. You may know that he had metal legs and one of them was damaged when he crash-landed. The Germans asked if he wanted another leg flown in. And he said, you know, yes. And the Germans contacted the RAF and they said, would you, you know, like us to stop the anti-aircraft fire for an evening so you can drop in the leg? And the RAF said, no, absolutely not. And they dropped it in the middle of anti-aircraft fire barrage. It was slightly damaged, to be fair. And the Germans, very efficient, you know, they repaired the metal leg and they put it on him in hospital, and when the doctors and the engineers were out congratulating themselves, he tried to escape. And he walked off on his metal legs, and they had to bring him back. And the man's attitude was fantastic. He was a character we need a few more of. He was, in many ways, a difficult, abrasive, occasionally rude man, but he was fantastically inspiring to all those around him, and he never let his disability affect his life. In fact, the very first thing, the doctor said, you know, here are some crutches. He said, what are these for? He said, well, you'll never walk without them. And he said, well, on the contrary, I'll never walk with them. And he never did. He learned to walk completely on his own. I love stories like this. Once you've read something like that, it makes it harder to moan and complain about the little difficulties of daily life, about stubbing my toe or getting a gas bill I can't pay or whatever it is. You know, they raise the standard, you know, they raise the bar. And someone once said to me that girls know they're going to become women, whereas boys don't know they're going to become men. They're not sure what the magic moment is. And they look around at the men around them and they wait for the clues, if you like. And we've sort of lost track a little, I think, sometimes, of the fact that boys need these cultural examples of what courage is, what decency is, what morality is, what integrity is, what self-sacrifice means. And they get them from stories. We've done that for 100,000 years around the old campfires. And to lose them from our history lessons is an absolute shame.
Con Nicholson wrote The Dangerous Book for Boys with his brother Hal, and Strange Chimps spoke with him.